Just get the best player available. Don't look at the positions early in a draft in the first 12 rounds, really.
Who is Eric's outfield 45?
I don't know, but I don't like him.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hi there, and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Wednesday morning, February 21st, 2018. Spring training is here. Games are about to start. What could be more awesome? My name is Eric Carabel. His name is Tristan H. Cockcroft. Tristan, are you ready for spring games?
Of course I am, and I'm excited that we've got another show with this volcano of hot talent lava.
What does that mean?
You didn't see the Eric Hosmer press conference.
No, why would I watch?
The most brilliant, come on, the most brilliant, brilliant agent who gets multi-million so late.
Yeah, I saw what he said. Let's just disregard, like, you know, all of analytics.
I couldn't believe he said that, though.
I watched Eric Hosmer play. He's the best first baseman in baseball. We have lots to discuss on today's show, including Eric Hosmer to the Padres. Seems a little bit odd. J.D. Martinez goes where he's supposed to go. I'm sure there were a lot of other signings since our last show. And, of course, later on, Kyle will expertly read the hash browns and will answer all that. First, here's the buzz. Well, let's talk about J.D. Martinez, the Boston first, Tristan, because that is a little bit more important for fantasy, let's face it, than the Hosmer move. J.D. Martinez, say you had him roughly number 30 overall while he was a free agent. Did you change that?
If I had him 30, I'd probably leave him about 30. He's going to lose a little bit in terms of homers, I think. And, I mean, that's going to be negligible. It's like the Edwin Encarnacion point I made a year ago. But he's probably going to gain in terms of runs and RBI, maybe also a hint in batting average, and that's going to neutralize it a little bit.
I mean, we kind of thought he was going to go there all along. And once we heard about the humidor, which we'll get to in a little while, I wanted J.D. Martinez to go to Boston. Right? I mean, this is a better spot for him than Arizona, now a neutral park. But that Boston lineup, like, when I heard about the Martinez stuff, I was like, wow, this doesn't just affect him. This is, like, good news for, like, it makes me like Xander Bogaerts more. And I already had Andrew Benintendi on my list of, like, breakout guys. Like, how can he break out more? Well, he can. I mean, like, Martinez in the middle of that lineup makes everything better. Right?
Certainly helps that they finally added a legitimate elite power bat, which is something they had sorely been lacking. And I'll be very happy to take the advantage of the runs scored that he's going to provide with those 2 and 3 run home runs.
Let me ask you this. So the humidor, I think we should get to it right away because it's a big deal. Todd Zola wrote an excellent piece at ESPN Fantasy about the humidor and its effects and what it's going to mean for individual players. Do you agree with what he wrote? And everybody should be checking that out, by the way. This is a very big deal, this humidor in Arizona. Now, it was kind of a big deal in Denver, in Coors Field. I think it's going to be a bigger deal here, and not to just give away everything that Todd wrote about, but now Arizona's Chase Field is a neutral ballpark. Do you agree with that?
I think we need to apply that park factor, yes. Todd makes the point that there's a range here, that there's always variability in terms of park factors, and one of the points that I've seen on this that I'll add to it that Todd also expanded upon in this article was the year-over-year inconsistency of the run factor in Chase Field. So this could kind of bounce back and forth. 1 year might not be the proper judgment, but I do think this is no longer an elite power ballpark. Things are going to change. It's going to affect home runs. It's probably also going to affect batting average. It's going to bump up starting pitchers. And the greater impact here is that look at the division. We've got a lot of divisional play, 18, 19 games a year for teams. So when visitors come in for 9 games a season, that's also going to impact pitchers on teams like, and the hitters, of course, on the Dodgers, Padres, Rockies, etc.
Give me some actual tangible results here. Like, say you, like, I didn't memorize your rankings before, you know, this happened or after, okay? I did move Paul Goldschmidt a few spots back. I still have him in my first round. You still have him in number 3. That would be a tangible, you know, something that matters. Greinke, does he move up? Robbie Ray, it seems to me, will, you know, be better than, not better than Greinke, but I moved Ray up and not Greinke really. So what have you done?
So in terms of the players here, I did not want to move Goldschmidt initially. My first thought was that anything he loses, he might gain in terms of stolen bases. They might attempt to play a little bit more small ball, and that would help him. But I will admit that over the past 24 hours, especially having read Todd's piece further and thought about it in greater depth, that it could be a pitcher's park. I mean, Derek Carty, another colleague of ours who's written a lot about this, has said since the beginning of the offseason, he thinks it'll become a near extreme pitcher's park. So it could go to that direction. I'm probably going to move Goldschmidt down a couple of spots. There's a few others that I think get affected. Jake Lamb was tied up, his value in, very much in power, I think is one is going to be adversely affected. I think Yasmani Tomas, who I'm sure we'll get to a little bit more, is primarily a power player. I think he'll get affected pretty dramatically. And I'm with you, Eric, on Robbie Ray. I think guys who have had some kind of bad luck in terms of the batted balls based on that ballpark are going to get little bumps on the pitching side.
So don't overreact. Don't run away from any Arizona Diamondbacks, but it makes you think a little bit. That's kind of what it is.
Right. The upside is not so great, and I think this is going to go to the daily players in season, is that it's not going to be anywhere near as attractive a play on a daily basis.
All right, so Martinez is in Boston, and look, he was great before that. What he did in his 2 months in Arizona last season, he wasn't going to do that this season anyway. Like, he would have hit 80 home runs. That's just craziness. I said maybe 35 and 100 for Martinez as like a baseline, as like a floor. He does miss, you know, 40 games a year. We kind of give him a pass for that, as I wrote in my piece. Like, it's like we don't even care. He's like the hitting version of Clayton Kershaw. You get your numbers in four and a half months, and you still have 6 weeks to find someone else to fill in and add to the numbers.
Now, in his defense, though, they are the same age. I like the Kershaw comp here based on the ages. He did run into the fence, and that was kind of a fluky injury. But you're right. We are not acknowledging the fact that there's injury risk, just like when Giancarlo Stanton got traded to the Yankees. I think people kind of swept that under the carpet. You're right. I don't know that I'd give him 35 home runs. I think the benefit here might be that with the Green Monster there kind of elevating the extra base hit potential, he hits 30 homers and bets at least 300. That before, I might have seen him hitting 280 or 290. Now I think 300 is a pretty strong probability. I think that's a great thing for that lineup. It'll have an impact up and down.
And I don't think anybody was really coveting Hanley Ramirez anyway. He'll probably platoon with Mitch Moreland, which makes a lot of sense. But knowing that Martinez misses games, then they'll get to play DH either way. Let me ask you this question, and you know, and anyone else. And by the way, I should introduce the other people. I'm being remiss. Awesome producer Gabe Bassane is here, researcher Kyle Soppy, and editorial watchdog Leo Howe as well. Do you think that Martinez moving from a full-time outfield spot to full-time designated hitter work will make him healthier, will have him avoid injury? Because I kind of think that's not really a narrative that I believe in.
I agree. I think it's overplayed. It's granted going to prevent him from running into fences because you can't if you're not in the field.
But if you can, that's a problem. Like if you start running into fences when you're not, I mean, you don't need a baseball glove, then
it's a problem. Yeah. I guess it conceivably could happen after you run over first base over the bag. If you turn right, you know, cut directly there.
Don't do that. Yeah.
No.
We're not experts, but don't do that. Don't run into fences.
This was, there was a player this offseason I was writing this about where, I think it was Giancarlo Stanton, in fact, that if he get some DH at bats that yeah, maybe there's that, but I think that a lot of his injuries had happened when he was specifically a hitter, so it didn't make a difference. In this case, you can only take Martinez as one defensive injury out there. I think he might have had another where he came in on a routine fly ball, but I'm with you. I don't think that this locks him into 150 plus games. It's dangerous to do that. And frankly, the fact that they have Hanley, Eric, you mentioned that he's platooning with Mitch Moreland. I think there could be some at bats just because there are guys on this team who could miss time due to injuries. I'm not a Hanley guy. I'm actually a little surprised that people are so optimistic about Hanley Ramirez.
I don't think either Moreland nor Ramirez get 500 at bats or even close to it.
Well, they don't want Hanley to because he's got that vesting option.
Okay. Hosmer. Did you change your ranking on him? I had him as a borderline top 10 first baseman. He is what he is. Like, he was number 30 in the player rater last year, but I think a lot of that had to do with the .318 batting average. If it was .290, which is kind of what we would expect going forward, he wouldn't have been top 50 hitter. The batting average made a really big difference because the power numbers are kind of modest and average, and they really shouldn't get any better in San Diego. Now, we can, you know, take off our fantasy hats and say what a ridiculous move this is for San Diego. It doesn't really matter. For purposes of statistics, I don't think Hosmer changes at all. I think he is what he is. He could hit .318 again. He could hit .290. He could hit .265.
For in terms of annual value, I don't think it was that bad for the Padres, in fairness here. But, I mean, for Hosmer, I don't love the destination. To go to the park factors here, Petco Park, after they moved in the fences, did improve in terms of power. And if you compare it to Kauffman Stadium, it's a slight bump. But these are both bottom 10 ballparks in terms of power. And if you take the homers out of the equation and look at the rest, Petco is a downgrade from Kauffman Stadium. Kauffman is awful for home runs. It's not quite as bad as Petco is for all of the rest. And that's a problem for Hosmer because, Eric, you wrote this too. He is an extreme ground ball guy. That's not a good thing for him. I think that, the homer total he had the past 2 years is the cap for him, and I moved him down roughly 5 overall spots.
Now, when I first heard of the Hosmer signing in San Diego, I was a little bit disappointed. It had nothing to do with Hosmer. He's a fine player, a good player. And Will Myers, a fine player, a good player as well. And the middle of that order is better than it was before. Myers in right field scares me. Not that I was investing in Colin Ray or any other Padres pitchers anyway, but Will Myers was kind of a disaster in the outfield. But my disappointment is, and they have all these other young players that could play outfield, and now Hunter Renfro probably doesn't get regular at-bats. Jose Perella, who's not all that young or great, but I would like to have seen what he could have done. Who else do the Padres have that we want to see? Oh, that Franchi Cordero. Mm-hmm. We're not going to see him now. Alex Dickerson, who 2 seasons ago was like a platoon, like a Matt Joyce bat, wasn't he? Like, if I remember. Lefty bat, who couldn't hit lefties, but had some emerging power. Mm-hmm. Matt Joyce isn't great for a 10-team standard league, but in a deeper league or an NL only, Alex Dickerson could have mattered. Mm-hmm. Now, none of them matter. And that's, I don't understand why they did that.
And that's the thing, is that I think the Padres are one of those rosters that are going to become very important in the second half of those NL-only drafts. These are very critical picks where there's a lot of profit potential to be had, and this deflates that. It deflates it not only for the outfielders, it also deflates it for some of those interesting pitchers, Eric, as you said, because you would have had to mix and match in the first place or only trust them in NL-only. The one who I don't think it's horribly adversely affected is Perella, because he could play in the infield. They could make him their utility man, give him 400 plate appearances or so all over the place, give him multi-position eligibility. He's only outfield right now, and that could benefit him. But he's still, at best, he's an NL-only pick now.
Really only 3 Padre hitters you would draft in a 10-team. Manny Margot, who's an emerging star, 15 homers, 30 steals. Will Myers, who's still a 30-30 threat. And Eric Hosmer, who's a borderline top 10 first baseman. All good players. You can make a case for all for top 100. I can't make the case for any other Padre hitters, though. Maybe Austin Hedges.
That's the weakness of catcher talking, okay. I think.
Other moves here. Shohei Ohtani, our rules and strategy were announced last week at ESPN Fantasy. By the way, our game is up. Go check it out. Any surprises there from the feedback? I mean, obviously, I think we're doing the right thing here. You can use them in a number of ways. Check out the story. No, you're never going to not use him as a pitcher. I think the hitting side is drastically overrated. Even with the CJ Cron trade, do you think that matters, by the way? Do you think the CJ Cron trade makes it easier for Ohtani to get at bats, or do you think it doesn't make a difference at all?
I don't think it makes a difference, because I think they were going to go in with the plan for Ohtani that they had in the first place, and that whoever was on the roster wasn't going to make a very big difference. If they signed a regular DH, that would have been an issue. I actually find the news about lowering the outfield fence line, the home run line from 18 feet high to 8 feet, was a little bit more designed towards Ohtani, and that kind of signaled a little bit more than the Cron trade that they are going to use him a handful of times at DH. I could see him getting 250 plate appearances and giving you some marginal value on that side, but no, I'm not drafting him because of that. I think that's the dangerous thing for people to do, is to assume there's a huge impact on the hitting side.
But if you're deciding between Ohtani and someone else that's ranked in that range, say, I don't know, give me a name, Kyle Hendricks or, you know, Tanaka or somebody like that, does this make a difference knowing that you can use them? In a daily league, I guess it would, because those are at-bats that you wouldn't ordinarily have. But right. In a standard roto league, it doesn't make a difference to me.
Yeah, in a weekly league, the hitting is going to have practically no value. And I honestly, for your projections, I wouldn't even account for them, because you're going to have to make the decision on a week-by-week basis, and he's just unlikely, just not going to give you enough on the hitting side to make it worthwhile. In a daily league, I might take him as the proverbial tiebreaker here. I think it's going to be pretty close to those that you mentioned. You know, Tanaka is kind of in that same general tier as him. I'd give him the slight edge still, but that's a lot of my looking into the peripheral numbers of Tanaka, and I think he's going to give you more volume.
Chris Young, by the way, the outfielder, not the tall Princeton guy, signed with the Angels. He's a right-handed hitter who hits lefties generally. I'm not sure he did much last year. And, you know, the original thought was, Will now help platoon with Cole Calhoun. He may platoon with Ohtani, actually.
You know who else they signed to compete for that? I don't think he'll make the team, though, is Chris Carter.
Exactly. Who's not a whole lot different than Crone, really. I mean, more power, certainly.
He's a lot more 3-2 outcome. I mean, you're right that he doesn't have the...
They don't care about that. They have pools.
Yeah. So. But like a guy whose value is going to be tied into potential power, yeah. I don't think Carter's going to make the team, though.
All right, let's go quickly through some of the other moves here because then we got hash browns in the second half. Yu Darvish, kind of think he's going to get overrated in drafts. I'm looking at where we all have him ranked. You like him the best. I have him ranked among the starting pitchers the worst between you, me, and AJ Mass, but I still have him in my top 70 overall. AJ has him way down in the overall because points leagues are different, but I feel like people are going to be expecting great things out of Darvish, and I just don't expect close to 200 innings, especially now with the Cubs. Like, I feel like they're going to be really careful with him.
They have enough depth in the bullpen. You're right. I think that's going to keep the innings in check. I could see 180. I could see 190, theoretically. The big plus of this move was it locks him into the National League, so I think he can put up the Dodgers numbers. And it's actually a good ballpark for strikeouts. It's an upgrade compared to where he spent most of his career in Globe Life. It's actually a huge bump compared to that old park, so at least there's that. I think you're still drafting him for the Ks. I can't see a top 10 starting pitcher.
Let's do a brief 30-second fantasy 101. What do you mean when you say it's a good ballpark for strikeouts? Because when you say it's a good ballpark for home runs, well, I know what that means. The fence is here, the ball goes there. But for strikeouts, explain to our listeners, what exactly does that mean?
Okay, so if you're familiar with the Park Factor page on ESPN, you can see that we run stats in comparison with a team and its pitching staff's numbers in terms of home and road games. I'll do that as well for strikeouts. Many people who do these Park Factors will do the comparison for all categories to get a read here. Strikeouts is something I've gotten a little bit more hooked into over the past 2 to 3 years because I'm noticing that there are certain parks that favor them more than others. Turner Field, before, you know, the former Braves Park, was one of the best for strikeouts. And I can't, Eric, entirely explain why that is necessarily. It could have something to do with the batter's eye. It could have something to do with the overall environment. For example, we talked about Arizona with the dry air out there. Things like that could have an influence on it. The altitude could. We know in Coors Field how it affects the breaking pitches and the like. But these things, there's some underlying stats that say, in terms of the strikeouts, the walks, extra base numbers, that those are things you need to keep in mind as well as runs and home runs.
All right. The two Florida teams making news over the past couple of days and week and all offseason, really, with the Jeter team. But briefly here, they don't look like very good teams. The Marlins this morning signed Cameron Maybin, who really should be one of the regular outfielders. It shouldn't be Derek Dietrich or whoever else it looks like they have here. Maybin could matter. Does it scare you about Lewis Brinson? Do you think they'll both play? And there's not a whole lot of guys in baseball that can steal 35 bases. Maybin is one of them.
He is. If he can stay healthy, absolutely he can. I'm not a Maybin fan, but when he's healthy, he does give you the numbers. I'm not going to deny that. I hate this move for Lewis Brinson because Mabin's likely to play center field, and that's where Brinson was most likely to play. And I was making the case that was one team that had the opportunity for Brinson to play every day. I think now they can keep these guys in the minors, buy another year of free agency. Very frustrating.
But they should. That's smart business.
If the
rules are ridiculous, but the rules are the rules.
From their perspective, it absolutely makes sense. For our perspectives, for baseball fans and fantasy players, it's bad news.
But, you know, Brinson could still be in that outfield. I mean, I'm looking at roster resource. Maybin in center, Brinson in right. Derek Dietrich is still a regular outfielder. They don't have anybody else. Mm-hmm. Somebody's got to play.
Well, so the issue with Brinson is that, honestly, I watch him play. He's not ready. And I would have liked to have seen him just be forced to learn at the major league level.
Well, I think we would have seen a lot of Keon Broxton, a lot of low batting average, a lot of strikeouts.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would have been nice to see it. But look, Cameron Maven's a guy nobody was thinking about yesterday. And now you have to think about him as a top 40 outfielder just because he could steal 35 bases. And
really? Five, top 40?
Well, I'm just saying, how many guys last year stole 35 bases? If I could get to it, the page, I would tell you, it can't be that many. Didn't Maybin lead the American League and he barely played the second half, too? I mean, like...
All right, I'm digging that up for you.
I'm trying to get to the page, but I remember thinking Maybin barely played with Houston, right? And I think he either led the American League or, like, Whit Merrifield beat him by, like, one stolen base. That's a lot of stolen bases for a guy who didn't play a lot. Here it is. Maybin had 33 steals and 395 at-bats. Yeah. That's less than Turner. I mean, he barely played. It was Rajay Davis, and now he could get 500 at-bats. So, yeah. I mean, I don't think Cameron Maybin's a great plate player, But if he steals 40 bases, he's going to help a lot of fantasy teams. Let's move quickly to Tampa Bay, where Steven Souza was traded to Arizona. And I've been talking about Souza for a couple years now, how I liked him, and last year it finally happened, albeit with the low batting average, a good source of home runs and stolen bases. But now in Arizona, I don't like him as much. Is that strange? I mean, it's humidor, right?
You don't, really? Explain that.
Well, one reason is the humidor. Two, I think if he had a low batting average in Tampa Bay, I'm scared to think he hits 220. In Arizona. Like, I don't want to overrate the humidor, but it does things to BABIP, right? I mean, it could yeah. clearly affect that. This was a guy who used to be, you know, brittle. Is he safe now? Is Giancarlo Stanton safe now to play 150 games? Of course not.
And
the other thing is, like, I don't know how they have a lot of outfielders still, even though Dyson's going to play. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Pollock, you never know how many games he's going to play. Yasmani Tomas has to get some at bats. So, I'm not sure that Souza's even guaranteed 500 at-bats, is he?
And the injury history also comes into play with the number of at-bats for Steven Souza. I got to address quickly the BABIP point here about the humidor is that people are going to notice that Coors Field has that outrageously high BABIP. One of the reasons for it, different environment, and also the vastly spacious outfield that's fueling that BABIP. So, Eric, when you say that, absolutely, it's going to affect it in a dramatic way in Chase Field. And I'm with you that there's this. My first read, looking at what people said out there in social media about this move afterwards, people were very optimistic about what this means for Steven Souza. I don't think I'm going to get him in any drafts just because I think there is too much optimism that people are not going to apply the appropriate amount of park factors to Steven Souza. And as you said, it is a deep outfield. They're going to have to mix and match a little bit, and he has an injury history.
And Tampa Bay now, Malik Smith, who could easily steal 40 bases if he gets the playing time, probably is an everyday player in left or right, I assume.
Unless they want to buy another free agency here.
Well, I doubt they would do that. I mean, I guess they could.
Why wouldn't they?
What's interesting about all these Tampa Bay moves is I don't think they got much worse. Jake Odorizzi was like barely replacement level, like a number five starter last year. You can say what you want about him. It's a lot of home runs. Mm-hmm. And so losing him, they go four-man rotation. Brent Honeywell comes up on May 1st, something like that. Like, I think I like the Odorizzi. Like, they didn't get anything for Odorizzi, but they opened up space. Mm-hmm. And then moving Souza like this, you know, I mean, it doesn't help them, but I feel like, you know, they can fake it, you know? So,
yeah. I've never been all that pro Souza because, as you said, the batting average and the injury risk. So, yeah, I could see it. Yeah.
Any other moves we must discuss before we move along?
We had more on that list, didn't we? I know there was another big. What's the other?
I didn't see any others.
Aye. My mind here.
Well, if we think of it in the second half, we'll do it then because Kyle's about to glean us with the knowledge of everybody on Twitter and their hash browns.
I love sports. I just wish they could be with me always. They say you don't choose the app. The app chooses you. It is everything I could ever want in a sports companion. It can stream the games and shows that I love, and it's there whenever I need it. I never thought I could find an app that loves sports as much as I do. Until now.
Download the ESPN app to stream ESPN Radio and all the ESPN networks now.
All right, there's that new music. Right out of the early 90s.
You are still not on board with that music. I don't think that's even 90s. A Twitter question.
I've no adopted interest. A new attitude, Kyle. I just don't care anymore.
Okay.
I just don't care anymore.
That's a new leaf, or that's just a leaf of, you know, just not caring at all? You're just willing to pass on it? Pun
no,
on the music
it's like,
whole?
You know, this was like music in an old Charlie Sheen movie or something. I don't know. It's like 90s. I mean, it's fine. It is what it is. And we got to get with the fans. We need a new, younger orientation of people listening to our show twice a week. And I want people to, and maybe this music helps with that. And the lady with emphysema doesn't, which, you know, like.
The early 90s throws me. I keep thinking of Color Me Bad and all that kind of stuff. I mean, wasn't that the early 90s?
Let's ask Kyle. He's a movie aficionado, Kyle.
Oh, yes.
What movie would this music come from?
You know, you're talking early 90s, so I could almost speak at that point. I wasn't really digesting movies at my high current level, so I, you know, I'm gonna.
There's a little Antonio Banderas Legend of Zorro action in there.
Legend of Zorro.
Are you guys familiar with that?
That'd be like mid to late 90s, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's still 90s.
Abe's my age, so you're only going to get so much out of the early 90s out of people that were barely breathing.
You got a young crew here.
Yeah. There's a pretty big difference, though, between early and mid 90s. Like, that cultural shift in terms of entertainment was pretty big.
When you're talking Men in Black and stuff around that time, right?
Yeah, and you're talking age 5 to 10 for me and Kyle, so there's not much going on intellectually there.
I'm not going to say another word.
Yeah, some might argue.
I could get in trouble. These are my friends. Okay, let's read some hash browns.
Well, yeah, the intellect on Twitter is never lacking. Eric
never
wanted to know, if you're waiting on drafting pitching this year, what bounce back candidates should he be targeting in the middle rounds?
Ooh, bounce back pitchers. Let's go to the rankings. And by the way, the rankings for all three of us are posted. You can play the games. There will be mock drafts coming up. Editorial Watchdog Leo, you're there, right? Tell us what everybody can find at ESPN Fantasy when it comes to baseball.
I would love to tell everybody what they can find. Yeah, if you open your app and go to the baseball tab, or if you go to ESPN.com/fantasy/baseball, you can check out all of our content. You can sign up for a league with your friends. You can sign up for a league with people who are not your friends. You've got the mock draft lobby and the live draft lobby. So if you're listening to this right now and you're like, yeah, I kind of want to draft a team, you literally go do that right now. We've got our draft kit up. We've got rankings. We've got sleepers, breakouts, and busts. We got all that fun stuff and a lot more to come.
Wow. That is awesome. Awesome stuff. And by the way, you should go into the mock draft lobby. Tristan and I are going to do it because it's practice. I've already got a couple drafts either going on right now, like either through email or an app, or you know, a draft coming up or a draft already done, and I could have used more practice to see what people are thinking, to see the depth of certain positions. It is helpful. And there might even be mock draft Mondays, right? That would be kind of cool. So
yeah,
or maybe we'll just mock draft on a Monday.
Yeah, stay tuned. I mean, there may be mock drafts that we do. There may be mock drafts that we do with people from the Twitter sphere. Lots of stuff could be happening.
And we should note, this show will be a two times a week show on Monday and Thursdays. Don't blame me. And that's going to be coming up probably in about 2 weeks. Tristan and I are going to Arizona at the end of next week for the USA Today Labor Drafts. Tristan is in the American League. I'm in the National League.
That's why we need some practice.
We need some practice.
Gotta get
some
mock drafts. Those
are
deep leagues.
They're very deep. 12-team AL only, 12-team NL only, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, so we better know our stuff, like the seventh catcher on every roster.
Yeah, so, and a lot of prep goes into that. Now, we do the drafts out in Arizona. We get to see some spring training games. We'll come back with lots of knowledge, and then we'll start our schedule of 2 weeks, and that's what we'll do. So the next show probably will be, you know, maybe like Thursday, March 8th, something like that, and then we'll go 2 a week starting the following week.
You left something very important out of that, though.
Mass Big Breakfast.
Bacon. Yeah, I love it. All our minds are synced here. We are ready for some questions.
Yeah, or the answer to the question.
Or actually answer the question.
Oh, yeah, let's answer this poor guy's question.
Yeah.
Well, I was just so excited.
I'll give you one. Okay, I'll start you with one of these because Leo just mentioned the draft kit. Kings of Command is out. Mm-hmm. One of the headliners for this one was Masahiro Tanaka, mentioned a couple of minutes ago.
Yes.
Why is Tanaka, like, I am ranked like 25th. Like, to me, that's not the answer to the question.
Bounce back, though.
Well, I guess, right, but like, to me, the answer to the question is somebody we have ranked outside like the top 50.
That's why I'm starting it with him. Let's get deeper.
Like Danny Salazar would be a guy. I'm not saying for sure.
With the injury he's
got
right
now? Well,
that's
the thing. I worry about health and making 25 starts. Cole Hamels would be a guy I would think about there. Dare I say Kyle's favorite pitcher? I mean, look, he's got some skills.
Say it.
He's durable.
Say it!
I took him
say
in
it!
NFBC.
Oh, my
right
God.
After you took... The Rocky pitcher went to the Cubs, whose name escapes me. I took Porcello. It was late. It was like all the starting pitchers, like 70 pitchers.
It was pick 835. It's all good.
It wasn't, but it was pretty late. It was to the point where like nobody could say to me, why are you taking Rick Porcello? It's like, why at this point I need innings. I can, if it's a weekly league, I can use him for the starts. I think it'll be better than not better. Don't you and I both have him ranked ahead of the guy whose name I can't remember? And please someone tell me the guy's name.
I believe we both do.
Are you talking about Tyler Chatwood?
Yes, Tyler Chatwood.
I have two spots behind Chatwood.
I was ignoring that, Eric. I don't.
Yes, Tristan and I both have Porcello ranked above Chatwood.
I don't.
You did last year, too.
I have him two spots behind him.
You did that purposely.
I had a couple of recommendations. If I can be a homer real quick and say both Blake Snell and Nathan Eovaldi, depending on how deep you want to go.
I took Eovaldi in the draft that Eric's talking about.
Yeah, I think they both, we talked about Odorizzi leaving and Honeywell probably not coming up for a couple months. Those guys have a chance to earn a spot in a 4/5-man rotation.
I will throw Lance McCullers. Still has pretty darn good stuff.
A lot like Salazar, isn't he?
He is, yeah, and I'm not going to deny that. I'm also not going to deny it with Garrett Richards, who also has great stuff and injury questions.
I got a great one.
Mark Melanson among closers, and who's the last one I had here? I'll dig it up. That's right, Jameson Taillon.
My guy's Aaron Sanchez. People should look up what he did two seasons ago, and now if all his blister issues or whatever are solved, then he should be really good. And maybe not as good as he was 2 years ago, but you know what I like to do? I like to look at ADP from the year before and not the current year as well to see what people were thinking. And I even wrote this in a blog, which I think comes out, I don't know, tomorrow. And it bounced back play, or maybe it was a question of the day. I don't know. Leon probably knows better than I at this point. But, like, if you look at last year's ADP and see some of the players that we liked, and it's not necessarily Miguel Cabrera because that changed, but, like, Jonathan Villar could get his act back on track and steal 40 bases easily. You know, like,
don't
let him go in like past round 20. Like, he should be going earlier than that. So, all right. So I'll name Aaron Sanchez.
By the way, with him, the blisters is the real question, but you know what? It wasn't the balls. Nope.
No, it's never the balls.
No.
All right. Do we need to name any other guys here or no?
Throw another. Who else are your favorites?
I'm not going to name Felix. Sorry, man. I have Mike Clevinger ranked. Too bad. He needs to move way up. I'm going to do that today. Leo, I'm going to be setting a new rankings. We could just do it on live on the show, right? Does anybody care?
Let's rank all 500 starting pitchers right now. Yeah, no problem. We got time.
I feel like I'm missing some top, some decent starting pitchers in my rankings.
Are you a Bumgarner guy?
Yeah, I think I have him 5. We have a draft tonight, by the way. I'm bidding a lot of money on him. I'm just telling you right now, and I have a lot of money.
I don't have any money to counter you.
Why I don't care.
I don't need them.
So you can't get them.
I don't need them.
I have like $200 for 10 players, and I'm going to be spending like.
I'll take my pitching staff over yours right now.
Yeah, no. Oh, nice to be a jerk. Yeah.
No, I will. I don't know about my offense.
You didn't say it in a very nice way.
Can I have yours?
You do have a crazy pitching staff. I don't know how we let you.
That's
have
all
that.
I have.
You have Sale and Kluber, right?
I have Sale and Kluber and Severino and Kevin Gausman, yeah.
Well, the first three you had me. Next.
Hey, ouch.
All right, Tristan mentioned having to go deep on positions. Brent plays in a dynasty league, and he's always waiting on catchers. He's wondering if you can help him out with some sleeper or breakout options at the position.
Is that a thing? Sleeper or breakout options. Man.
This position is just bleak.
It doesn't look good. I'm looking for like a backup catcher in NFBC, and I can't find anybody who's even going to play.
Like,
I have, like, the guy I have is Tommy Murphy of Colorado, who I would name as a sleeper every time because a year ago we thought he was going to hit 20 home runs and be really good. And then he just kept getting hurt. And now they have Iannetta, and you're thinking, really? That's going to block him? Like, I'm not into, like, this guy's blocking this guy, he'll never play. We did that with, you know, Clay Bellinger last year. It's ridiculous. So, like, when it comes to Acuna or Robles or Kingery, when they're ready, they're playing.
Right.
A little different
a catcher, though, don't you think?
Cody Bellinger, of course. If Tommy Murphy is ready and healthy and he's their backup, or say he's in AAA and he's going nuts, he's going to play. He's going to come up and play. You know, he could be better than Iannetta. So I would say Murphy's on my list.
Yep.
Chance Sisko, maybe?
That's the AL one that I was thinking about, but I'm worried that the Orioles are going out of their way to block him. I mean, granted, Andrew Susak's dealing with some injuries early in camp, so maybe that opens up things for Susak.
I've given up on Susak. Have you given up on Susak by this point? Like,
I have, but bringing him in is like by design of going with Caleb Joseph and Sisko or Susak. Sisko, Susak, so confusing. As they're two guys.
I invested in Susak either last year or the year before when he went to Milwaukee, and I just couldn't get it done. Couldn't hit in the minors, couldn't stick.
He's a non-draft guy, I think. Yeah. I think it's Joseph and Sisko right now.
How about Devin Mesoraco? You have enough? Tucker Barnhart's really good, like a gold glove defensive catcher.
Yeah.
Who I have in my sim team.
Are you taking, I mean, I can make you the case, it's a dart throw, and let's be clear, it's just a dart throw.
What about
right?
Blake Swihart?
I liked him better until Eduardo Nunez signed, when they were talking about dabbling at second base. They need to give him a utility role, and I don't see how they're going to... Isn't he out of options, though? I'm going to look it up.
Aren't we all, Tristan, out of options?
Out of... Now we're really going to confuse people.
I mean, isn't that something inherent to all of us in a way?
Yeah.
Kyle, what you got?
All right, Matt's trying to decide between a $29 Strasburg versus a $6 Albies in his auction keeper points league. The question's kind of more broad than that. It's how do you balance the temptation of a low-cost player with high upside versus an expensive player with a proven track record?
It's too expensive for me. I mean, obviously we need to know more context of the league, but that's a lot of money for any starting pitcher. Not named, you know, Scherzer or Kershaw. And by the way, read the Kershaw article on ESPN Fantasy written by Ron Chandler. Because I was wondering, is he a first-round pick? He's not in my first round, but no pitchers are. But if I was a normal person, would I even have Kershaw as the number one pitcher? I still don't. I have Scherzer one. He misses time. Strasburg at 29 is a little too much for me. I would keep it. Albies is going to bat second. That's a potential 15-homer, 25-steal guy, Albies. Or is
yeah,
that too crazy?
Well, he's one of the biggest buzz machines so far of early spring training. I think he's going to potentially be overvalued in a couple of spots, but in his defense, was actually a little better in the final points league ranking than he was in Roto, which might surprise people. Some of the development that he did there, especially the mild power, definitely boosted that number. And I'm with you that $6 is the better value here. We're giving the vacuum answer. We just don't know the context of this, because I think Strasburg in the majority of points leagues is worth 29. You're more likely to get him closer to 29 than Albies at 6.
Right. We have Albies probably in like the 150 overall range, 15th round. Maybe that's a $6 player, but I'd be willing to spend a little bit more for him because of the paucity of steals. Strasburg.
Although in the points league, you don't need the steals. That's the thing that I'm concerned here. I think there
no, you're
is
right.
a lot to his game.
Everything's different in a point. Everything we say is a Roto league unless we say points league. Is that fair? For the
right.
next however many shows we end up doing.
Right. But this is the thing. Like, we don't know to what extent this league is going to value pitchers. I mean, in my points league, my longtime home points league, it actually makes sense for you to go with a 55-45 percentage.
Yeah, in a points league, I'd keep Strasburg there. In a Roto league, I would not. All right, moving on.
Alrighty, Steven plays in a 16-team keeper league with OBP as a category. He's wondering who you got looking long-term and this season, David Dahl versus Dansby Swanson.
On-base percentage, huh? Maybe I'm in the minority here. I still think Dansby Swanson is going to be really good. I know what we thought about him going into last season, and I know what he ended up doing, and I know how old he is, and I know he's batting eighth, and I don't care. Like, he is going to be a star. I think he's going to be a great player. I really do. I still do. I think he's going to get on base. I think he'll take walks. I think he'll hit the ball the opposite field like Jeter did. I think he's going to still be a really, really good player. And I don't think what happened last season changes that. And I think people who just assume that he's done as a prospect are missing the point. Dahl, I just don't think can stay healthy. And I don't think that skill is going to just start developing at some point either. And I hate to say that because he looks like a really good player, and there's a lot more upside statistically for fantasy with David Dahl than there is with Swanson. I mean, Dahl could be a guy who hits 20 home runs and steals 20 bases. I'm not sure Swanson can reach either of those, but I think long-term I'd have to take Swanson.
I think there's also a considerably greater chance that Dahl is the more frustrating of these two on a year-over-year basis. I mean, you point out the upside, the downside is pretty darn
Over-under on Dahl 100 games with the Rockies.
Under.
Yeah, I mean,
and they have opportunities. Let's be clear here, but I need to see proof of health, Eric. That your point about the injuries—it was a big problem for him last year, and I hate the repetitive ones. And Swanson has superior plate discipline.
And if you're a Rocky, if you're on the Rockies, like, why wouldn't you just play Ryan McMahon at first base every day and Desmond in left, rather than mess with Dahl, who just can't stay on the field? Like, I don't know why you would bother. McMahon is ready to do what Bellinger did. Not going to hit 40 home runs, but he could hit 25 home runs and bat 280 if you just let Ryan McMahon play first base every day and bat sixth. I really believe that. I moved him up my rankings. I hope. I think I did.
Am I crazy to say that I would rather see Raimel Tapia play regularly than David Dahl?
Not at all. Not at all. I still think Tapia more fourth outfielder.
I do, too.
But, yeah. And, by the way, if you ask me Swanson's numbers, and again, we think in CRT Albie's about 1-2 in the order and Swanson about 7 or 8. I think Swanson, and he'll have more walks because of batting 8th in front of the pitcher, but I think this is a 15-homer, 15-steal guy who bats 280 for years. I do.
And I think it could be better than that.
And I think his on-base could be over 350 now.
Sure.
And you'll find him as a sleeper in our Sleepers, Breakouts, and Busts column on ESPN Fantasy.
Really? When is that coming out? Is it already out?
It's out. Yeah, you can find it. It's at the top of the draft kit.
Is it?
Yeah.
We have a draft kit.
We do.
What a great day. Okay. What's next, Kyle?
Building on that Swanson question, then I got one more for you. What do you think over the next 5 years Swanson's best ceiling looks like?
2020 with 300. Ian Kinsler? I don't know. Is that fair? I think he's going to be...
Kinsler!
I think
that's interesting.
Fantastic.
I like that. Okay.
I mean, we've been comparing Kingery to Kinsler. But there's a lot of different Kinsler, too. Like, not today's Kinsler. But...
I'm not quite sure what to make of Kingery just yet. I'm still thinking
Kingery gets. I bet Kingery's up early May. Still gets 500 at bats. I mean, Bellinger didn't play until April 25th, so let's not go crazy if he doesn't make the opening day roster. Kingery's not going to. Acuna might not. Mm-hmm. Robles probably won't. I'm just saying. I think Swanson's going to be good. And again, we're talking about him a lot here for. You know, our basic is a 10-team standard, right? Is that what our basic is, or 10-team points?
10-team points is our standard.
So you're not even taking Swanson in a 10-team points. But in any deeper league, yeah, I think there's upside.
So at age 26, Ian Kinsler hit 319 with 18 homers and 26 steals. In 2 years, can you see Dansby Swanson doing that?
It's a little generous, but...
Two years is a heck of a long time in a development path for a player this age.
I mean, that was also... Wasn't that like Kinsler's... Now, it wasn't his best year, but that was the only year he really hit well over 300.
He had a near 30-30 year, if I recall.
He did, but like, he had a couple. But I don't think he hit 300 generally. He was
correct.
Like 275,
he never hit 300 again.
He had some injury issues. I don't. Maybe Swanson will have those. I just look, if you ask me Swanson versus Albies, now in a points league, see, a points league's different than a roto because, you know, the steals of Albies wouldn't matter as much, but...
I like this one. Would you take Albies or would you take Swanson?
I think you'd have to take Albies, wouldn't you? I think there's more immediate upside.
Yeah, the today is a little bit too important, and they're close enough, I think, long term.
And there's more risk, obviously, with Swanson because he struggled so much and Albies didn't. So there is, and one of them's batting second and one's batting eighth. That matters. That's 100 at bats over a season. All right, any non-Braves questions?
I like that. Well, we got one more. Yeah, one more question here. Edwin wants to know if there's any positions that have you tempted to reach for in a deeper league based on the scarcity of talent at the position. I guess we're not including catcher in that.
ESPN standard is only one catcher.
Yeah, yeah.
If it was two, this would be a different answer.
Yeah, go one catcher league just to please the masses here.
Even then, though, if it was two catcher, would you not consider going with the cheap route?
You know, I'd be more likely in a two catcher league to at least get myself somebody who I kind of trust, if that's fair. Like in labor, I'm going to get somebody who I think will play, and then my second catcher will be like Andrew Knapp. But like, I want to make sure I have at least some catcher numbers in a two catcher league.
Sure.
And if that means like the guys I like are not, I'm not taking Sanchez, Posey, Contreras, like guys like that. But like, I like to get a guy like Yadier Molina or Wellington Castillo because that's to me is 400, 450 safe at bats, 15 home runs. He'll play. He won't hurt my batting average. I would rather do that than a guy like Zanino who could really hurt the batting average, or a guy like McCrory who might not even find a job, or Hedges who could hurt the batting average.
McCrory,
so,
yeah, that's
you know, like, I'm trying to find somebody who I can at least count on for some base of numbers, and then my second catcher, I'll take a chance. But to answer this question, first of all, in the first 10 rounds of any draft, be it a points league or a standard, I don't even care about the positions. I really don't. You shouldn't. Like, I see this all the time. Nelson Cruz is getting pushed down in drafts because he's DH only. So what? He's also like one of the top five preeminent power sources over the past 3 years, showing no signs of aging. A year from now, by the way, JD Martinez is going to be in the same boat. He's not going to play 20 games in the outfield. Boston's nuts if they let him play at all in the outfield. So JD Martinez and Nelson Cruz will be two DH-only players next year who I would consider in round three or four. The numbers are safe. Mm-hmm. So don't worry about that.
The DH thing matters is when you have so many of them that it's tough to fill the roster spots, like that year with labor where there were 9 DH eligibles.
Yeah, that's a little bit different.
It was an anomaly, though.
I'll say this. I don't think second base, shortstop, or third base is inherently weak at all. Not much weaker than first base. I kind of think outfield, when you have to get 5 of them on your team, is more of a problem than filling your middle infield spot. But I'll say this. I think starting pitching depth is a problem.
I'm totally with you on starting pitchers. Yes, I think it is important to get one of those aces among starting pitchers. Catchers, by the way, I probably will take the quarterback approach to that one. That's actually probably the most important position to, in your league, if you are a non-standard league, to mock draft to get a sense of exactly where the catchers are going in your league, because you need to be prepared to get the one value that slips to you. And it could be in round 10 and it could be in round 25. I don't know what it is, but Eric, I'm with you. Starting pitching is the one. If I had to take another offensive position, second base is the next closest.
I think second base is strong. I mean, nobody's going to take like Starlin Castro. He could bat second or third for that team.
So we could debate second base and outfield because I think outfield is strong.
I think outfield's strong until like top 40, you know. But I think just get the best player available. Get your value. You know, don't look at the positions early in the draft in the first 12 rounds, really.
Who is Eric's outfield 45?
I don't know. But I don't like him.
I'm going to look. I want to know now because I bet you there's enough guys.
In the
here.
Drafts I've done, I felt like, oh, man, really? I mean, I'm taking this guy. And like in our NFBC, my outfield's terrible, potentially. Like I took Acuna and Robles. And I took the Brewer guy who may not play. He still hasn't been dealt. Like Domingo Santana, put him on the Marlins. Let him bat third.
You know, that position battle is pretty intriguing right now. A lot of people are talking about it.
About
good way to
Brewers?
Finish things up, right? Yeah, the Brewers, first base and outfield.
I think, would they really play Ryan Braun regularly at first base?
I hate it. You know why I hate it? Jesus Aguiar.
Well, see, like, I think Eric Thames and Aguiar would be a really nice platoon.
I think Aguiar would be just fine as their everyday first baseman.
I think that too, but...
In fact, I could see Aguiar being a better player than Domingo Santana this year, but it's not going to happen.
Well, he's not going to steal any bases. But, like, the point is, Braun at first base... Like, first of all, don't assume health, just like you can't for J.D. Martinez. Just because he leaves the outfield doesn't mean he's going to be healthier. That's ridiculous. Some of Braun's injuries happen, well, for dubious reasons, but also when he's running or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that at all. But I don't think I'm on the Ryan Braun bandwagon this year. I still have Santana in a couple leagues. I really kind of need him to play. I kind of think this is going to work out. And, you know, the Brewers could end up doing with, like, nobody's even thinking about this. What if Braun and Eric Thames is like Hanley and Moreland at first base for Boston?
Ooh.
Why do they have to give Ryan Braun 600 at-bats if he's not worthy of it? He wasn't worthy of it last season. Santana was worthy of the at-bats.
Yes.
Braun was not.
Santana, I think, was their best in terms of the underlying numbers, the way the runs created.
Absolutely, he was their best
hitter. On base, yeah.
All right, well, the music stopped, so I think they want us to stop. Let me ask you this. So spring training games are starting, I think, today or tomorrow. What are you watching for? Our next show is not for 2 weeks. What are you watching for in early spring games as opposed to later spring games? Or maybe you're not watching at all. Do you care? Is it really all about just who gets hurt? Do you listen to any manager speak? Give me a primer of what you're thinking because you win your leagues for the next 2 weeks. I just threw that in there.
Great. We got to start with that again. The early spring games... Honestly, there's one thing I'm watching, and it's the lineups. I want to see what the early lineup construction is, because that's one of the big tells of the early stages, is where managers are trying to get creative in the top three spots. Beyond that, I don't think there's an awful lot, and I don't think you can read anywhere near enough in terms of pitchers, because they're kept on very limited pitch counts. If you're looking for anything there, it's, did they add a new pitch, and is there anything significantly changed about their command?
I agree with you on all counts. Managers do put lineups out there that they think could be their lineups in the season. They don't do it with closers. Don't even bother. We're going to see Craig Kimbrell and Kenley Jansen in the fifth inning of these spring games so they can leave early and go golfing.
Are we going to curse another guy in terms of getting injured? Remember the Angels dude?
The Angels? What are you talking about?
We went to that game where Houston Street came in like the third inning and then he got hurt.
That's right.
And then two other guys came in and they also got hurt.
Yeah. The other thing I think we do need to look out for, and you're going to think I'm crazy here because I should know better, but... It mattered last year, didn't it? Hitters who adjust their swings. If we see somebody who is hitting for power that normally doesn't, and they tell a reporter, oh, yeah, I changed my swing path, or they do a Ryan Zimmerman, don't we have to take notice of that now?
Yeah, the launch angle revolution, the uppercut swing switch last year was a big thing. Do you know who's one of the guys who has been a big buzz candidate for that this month?
Do tell.
Juan Lagares.
Come on, really?
I am not joking. Juan Lagares is trying to get into the launch angle revolution.
I'll tell you what. I'm not drafting Michael Conforto. I don't think he plays in April.
I don't either.
Daniel Murphy. I'm not sure he plays in April.
I want to be pro Daniel Murphy. I like the guy. Great skill set. And same with Conforto, but it's just the injuries.
They don't rush these guys back, whether you're a contender or not. Daniel Murphy, if he's not ready on April 1st, is not going to play.
Yeah, and the Nationals have a good fill-in. Wilmer Defoe.
Wilmer Defoe. All right, we're done. Thank you so much for listening to our fine show. Check out ESPN Fantasy. It's all there. Draft kit, rankings, Tristan's articles, whatever you could use. And we will have some mock drafts coming up, and you can see what we've been thinking in the mock drafts. Lots of articles and blogs and lots of good stuff there. Thanks to Tristan H. Cockcroft. I'll see you next week in Arizona. Awesome producer Gabe Bassain. You have lots of other shows. Anything you want to plug here, Gabe, for the podcast?
I am totally done for the week, aside from my wrestling podcast, Cheap Heat. So I guess be on the lookout for that. All but right. Other than that, I'm done for the week. I did Courtside, the college basketball podcast yesterday, as well as our hockey podcast, ESPN on Ice.
Nice. March Madness is coming up, so you'll want to be listening to that podcast as well, and the hockey playoffs. You have something to say, Kyle? What?
No, March Madness might be the greatest 4-day stretch of the sporting calendar in the history of mankind.
That's the first weekend, you mean?
It's only four days?
Well, no, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, where it's wall-to-wall action. It's insane.
Okay. Yep. That was Kyle and editorial watchdog Leo Howell. Howell is also here making sure everything gets posted properly, so thank you to Leo as well. I am done speaking. Thanks so much for listening. Have an awesome day, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Everything is awesome.
Darkness.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at espnradio.com.